Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
With me today is Beth Noble. Beth is a successful student, alumni, I guess now, of LSAT Demon. So you are a success story. This is another in our series of Demon success stories. I'll let you drive here. Why don't you just talk about where you came from and how you prepped and where you ended up?
Yeah, definitely. So I started studying with the Demon in December of 2021. But before that, I started looking at LSAT stuff just on Khan Academy back in 2020, or early 2021. Just started taking tests on there. I took a diagnostic, got a 147. And Khan told me that within 2 months, I could make it to like a 177 as long as I did like five tests. With no other study material. Yeah, it was just like, do a test weekly. No, it was like you did some practice problems and then they just expected your score to go up, you know, 5-10 points a week.
Just 30 points in 5 weeks or whatever. What they estimated for you.
They had me do the thing, like I put in a test date. I think I said like I wanted to take it in March and they were like, great, this is what you need to do then and how many you need to do and the benchmarks you'll hit. And I think after a couple of weeks where my range stayed right in between like 145 to 155, it was kind of like nothing is changing. So I started to look around for study services and I really didn't want to pay for anything. I wasn't convinced that it was worth it, I think, at the time. And I found, I don't know if you know the guy, Steve Schwartz, who does like an LSAT blog.
Yeah.
He's the guy that does like, you don't need a diagnostic test, just buy his stuff and read his things. And he does a lot of like, you should write your own LSAT problems and make your own games sort of training.
Yeah. I don't like any of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what I did with him, I bought like a 2 month study plan, only $15, thankfully. And I bought prep test books and I just started doing them and it was just like nothing changed. I kind of got into the 150s. I just like got better at games just by practicing them, but nothing else changed. I ended up signing up for a test months in advance. I signed up for the June 2021 test. I took that test. It was hardly anything beyond my cold diagnostic. I got a 154 on that.
What was your cold again?
147.
147 to 154 using Khan and some other just basically all you were doing was doing tests. I mean, the problem with that approach is that you're not learning anything from the mistakes you're making. So you're just going to continue hammering test after test after test.
Yeah.
I have no idea what kinds of explanations Steve has, but I do know that Khan's explanations are garbage.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't even use his explanations. I read like his lessons and I just remember reading even just what a necessary condition was or a sufficient condition. And I just had no idea. It just seemed like totally like gobbledygook kind of stuff. It never made sense. So took the test, got a 154, and I was like, all right, don't know what I'm going to do with this. I kind of held off for a little while. I actually got married in September after that, so I put things on pause anyway.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Just kind of had to plan a wedding instead. And around in the fall, I think December is when I didn't do any more studying and I started looking into, I live in Denver, so I wanted to go to either the University of Denver or CU Boulder.
Okay.
Started looking at their numbers and I saw that like Denver's median is somewhere around, I don't know, 157. And so I started going, okay, maybe I could get in there with my 154 and not have to take it again.
You could have probably.
Yep.
They're private school.
Yeah. Yeah. They're private. And I was ready to start applying in December. So what I started doing, I was actually looking for how to write my personal statement in December. And that's how I found the Thinking LSAT podcast. And before I found that podcast, I was actually about to write my personal statement about like, you know, just like worst things that's ever happened to me. Like, woe is me.
Here's all the trauma in my life. Please admit me to law school based on sympathy, which they would probably be perfectly happy to do.
Yeah.
They're just going to charge you, you know, Denver, the full tuition there looks like is $55,000. Yep. So, you know, the sympathy admit is going to pay the sympathy price. It's like, well, yeah, totally. I mean, you're lowering our medians for LSAT and or GPA. Like, you're not a super competitive applicant here. So, but we need somebody to pay the bills. Yeah. So sure.
Come on in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, after listening to a couple of you guys just ripping apart personal statements last year, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't write about, you know, like my worst day. I should come up with something good. And what I did from there is I went to LSAT Demon. I actually emailed to like set up personal statement editing with Leslie.
Yeah.
And I got an email back from the help team basically just being like, do not apply in December with a 154. Please, please, please take the LSAT again if you're going to go to law school.
Yeah. So, I mean, Denver. I'm looking at University of Denver standard 509 information report. By the way, all of our listeners, you can go to LSATdemon.com/scholarships if you want to play around with our scholarship estimator and get handy links to the PDF 509 for each one of the schools that's ranked by US News. And so, you know, handily, I can just pull up all this public data. And the reason why we say what we say is because the public data like just makes it clear that you're an idiot. If you their 25th percentile LSAT is 157, right? So you've got a 154 on record, which means they would love to deny you. But if they are going to admit you, and they do admit 25% of the class with less than a 157, but those are the people that aren't going to get any kind of scholarship consideration. And this is at a school that, again, they charge $55,000 a year tuition. And of their 806 students at the school, 634 of them, that is 79% of them, get some kind of scholarship help. And Beth, you were lining up to be among those 21% of the class that's actually paying full price. I mean, 27% of the class gets somewhere between half and full tuition. Another 12% of the class gets actual full tuition scholarships. So you're looking at a solid 40% of the class that pays, you know, something less than half price, including zero potentially.
Yeah.
And you would have been lining up to pay the full 55. So what'd you do instead?
So actually it was kind of funny. I got that email that was basically like, you could go to law school for free if you bring up your, bring up your LSAT score, take it again. I showed that email to like my husband and I talked to my mom about it and they were kind of like, are you about to get scammed on something? Like nobody knows that this is actually true. But what I did, I started studying with the demon. I started with a free account and I think I pretty quickly switched to live, I think by the end of December. And I was studying daily at that point. I wasn't taking full tests. I started with drilling. I started with the sections I liked. So I would do games a lot at first because it was my favorite. I started going to classes. And actually really like January, I think, I was in a class one day and somebody private messaged me in class and she was like, hey, do you need a study partner? Trying to grab a couple study buddies. And she told me where she was scoring and she was like 15 points higher than me. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, if you're willing to teach me, I don't feel like I can contribute much to this.
Yep.
But really it worked out that, so I got together with her and then one other woman. And what we ended up doing was doing a section almost daily or every other day where we would do a section and we'd get on FaceTime together and we'd go over our questions that we missed. And then, yeah, just in between that, I did live for about 2 months. So I was going to classes. Yeah, going to classes, asking questions.
I don't remember everybody who comes to class because many people don't have their cameras on or they don't ask questions. And you were there with your camera on and like raising your hand or just putting a question in the chat or just, you know, unmute yourself and interrupt Nathan and just say something. Because ultimately, that's what we really want is for you to just tell us the parts that you don't get so that we can help you get there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, classes were awesome. It was really, really, really worth the couple of months that I did them. I mean, a couple of things about it. Like I shot up in points fairly quickly once I started going to class and explanations actually made sense and I was understanding what was going on. And really just reading what was on the page and not looking for tricks and gimmicks and not highlighting my reading comp passages. And well, I mean, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Con unfortunately led you down the wrong path because Con has got all these stupid gimmicks of like, well, highlight the main point or whatever. And it's like, wait, what if they don't even explicitly state the main point? Or what if they don't state the main point until the very end of the passage? Like, what? You're highlighting shit in the first paragraph? You don't know what the main point of the passage is yet. What are you even doing? So it's these gimmicks that are like not actually related to really understanding what's going on. Sorry,
yeah,
I interrupted you.
Totally. No, you're fine. And it was exactly that for games too. And I had myself convinced that I could understand ordering games, but I would never be able to understand like in-out games. And I mean, just scrapping all of that was great. And just understanding, like, just read the rules, do what it says.
So for people who don't know, like if you've never studied with the demon, we just don't talk about game types. I don't care. People will be like, but Nathan, what type of game is this? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I just solved the whole game. Like, it's the game that gives us all the information we need to answer every question perfectly. And that's always the case. And so what are you talking about with your game types? Like, there's so many games that don't fit neatly into one of those types. So if you studied again, you know, to shit on Con, it's sad because it's free and I want it to be good. I want it to actually be helping people. But instead, it's like just causing people to spin their wheels with this, like, well, if it's not a sequencing game or if it's not a grouping game, then I don't know what to do. Like, I'm scared of hybrid games. Okay, well, you're never going to get perfect if you don't get good at all of them. So why do we even give a shit about these game types? I just don't find it useful.
At all. Yeah. Definitely wasn't. I agree. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it was great. It was live was awesome. I was willing to like dive in with as much time I could give it at the time. I work full time too. So, and I work from home and luckily for me, that means things are flexible. So I could go to classes that I wanted to go to. I think right at the beginning, I went to a ton of classes and then I soon realized that's not really what I needed to do. I needed to go to the ones that I could actually invest in fully, ask questions and not spend 8 hours a day doing LSAT.
Yeah, we have what, 30 classes a week in, or maybe not that many, 20, 25 classes a week in LSAT Demon. Today we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them and a couple of them are 2 hours. So, you know, it's like, yeah, there's like 8 hours worth of stuff that you could have done, but I would much prefer that you just do one class and like put everything into that one class. So eventually you started doing that.
Yeah. So I did start doing that. I like games came first for me. My games were perfect within like a month. Those were great. And so even that was like, I had to even just be like, okay, those might be the most fun classes for me to go to, but that's not the wisest use of my time anymore.
Oh, we got an email today from somebody who is like, hey, I'm struggling to see improvement in my reading comp. And then is like, well, based on my demon ratings, I've spent 113 hours on games, 106 hours on logical reasoning, and 46 hours on reading. Is that discrepancy potentially the source of my problem? And it's like,
maybe.
Could be. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked on it less than half of the time that you spent on those other sections. And you're telling me that those other sections you're improving more?
Yeah.
Yeah, might be something there.
Totally.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you got over that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually kind of how it was for me at first too. It's easy to bite off one game or easier to bite off one LR question at a time. And I was doing the same thing of like reading comp was my handicap that I was just like, I'll do that on my, that's tomorrow. And there was actually one class that I went to pretty early on with you. And I remember asking you, hey, I got like 3 out of 7 correct on reading comp, what should I do? And you were just like, just read it again, just start over. Just like, that's, you wasted your own time. And I think that clicking for me that like, if I'm reading my reading comp and I hate it, I'm wasting my own time. And my score is just not going to get where I want it to go if I have good LR perfect games and just shitty reading comp 100% of the time.
Yeah, you're not getting into the 170s, which is hopefully where we're going if we can. Yeah. And you know, you do have the horsepower, I think, to get there, but you're not getting there with like mediocre on the games. You're not. And you are wasting your time. I mean, if you're missing questions, that's a waste of time. You didn't spend enough time on it to actually get paid for it. So what are you even doing? You're just purely wasting time at that point. Like, oh, you got 3 out of 7 on the passage. Holy shit. So you got like random guessing would have been like 1.5 questions, correct? So you're doing slightly better than random guessing. But let's be honest, you're mostly guessing.
Yeah.
And you got to just slow down. So how did you do that? How did you figure out how to slow down?
Spending more time reading. I mean, I noticed myself rushing through, and I noticed myself when I didn't understand a sentence, because they make them long run-on sentences. They suck to read sometimes. The shift was actually read that, wait, no, go back, reread that, read before, you know, understand what comes before the comma, before you even move on to the next one. And really having it click that the next sentence is not going to illuminate what that one I'm on right now means. That was huge for me, and just not being willing to move on. And
say then, it again.
Don't move on until you understand the sentence right in front of you.
Yeah. And the way you said it was the next sentence isn't going to explain the previous sentence that you didn't understand.
Right.
These aren't the type of documents where it's going to just like state the main point in the first sentence and then develop the main point for 5 paragraphs and then tell you again the main point at the end of the passage. It's not like that. It's not, this isn't a 7th grade essay. This is a law school type of difficulty level, and it's intentionally written pretty poorly. So you really have to make sure that you're, the metaphor that I use in class these days is that you need to chew your food and swallow it before you start cramming more in your mouth. And that's essentially what everybody's doing on reading comp. When they read one section, their mouth is still full, and then they just, I'm going to read another sentence.
Yeah.
But I didn't finish actually processing the first one. And yeah, I mean, that's how you choke. So that's great. You stopped doing that, took it one sentence at a time.
Yeah. And actually, like you talked about in classes too, like before you would send us off to read, like, You're a boss. You just sent an employee to read something and come back and give what was the main point of what I read. That really helped me too. I work for the government. I literally read codes of rules and regulations for a job and decipher them and write about it. And even just acknowledging like, oh, wait, yeah, I can do that because I do that. This is not the same as just what I read in undergrad classes and had to come up with to make it look like I read it in a discussion post.
Oh, right. I mean, college does such a terrible job. They're like, here, you just have these 1,000 pages to read this week. And all the actual students end up doing and even people who get good grades, they read like the minimum that they need to read for a test, or they read the minimum that they need, like you said, to put some stupid discussion. I hate those forced discussion posts in classes. It's such bullshit. You can tell that everybody, or not everybody, right? Some people are like actually into it and read the whole thing and write thoughtful posts. Yeah. But then the other like, 80% of the class is just like, well, I read this part and I just made some stupid post. It's like I opened the reading to the middle of it and just kind of read a little bit and then put it in the post.
Yeah. I mean, but then like everybody gets the same credit for it. So, you know, if you're smart, you figure out, like, just read the excerpts.
bad teaching there.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely. Yeah.
You wrapped your head around, hey, you know what? This passage is only 14, 15 sentences.
Yeah.
It's not 14 chapters like I was reading in college or like I'm going to read in law school. Instead, it's just like one short thing and I have to actually make sense of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what happens when you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think a couple classes too, teachers talked about like just feign interest in this. You're like, all you care about right now is, you know, DNA and RNA or Marie Curie, whatever it is. You're so interested.
Fake
and
it till you make
check
it.
Check yourself.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like,
oh, Marie Curie. Oh, that's so interesting. I've always wanted to know about a famous.
Right.
Woman scientist. I didn't know anything about her. And they're like, what are you telling me about? But you, I know you didn't wake up this morning going like, oh, I really wish I could read about Marie Curie, but that's not, you don't get to pick. That document was given to you by your boss, and your boss is like, hey, what's this about?
Yeah. So figure it out. Yeah, exactly. We like, I play a lot of trivia, even just like Trivial Pursuit. And I've even noticed like there are tidbits of things I know because I actually engaged with reading comp passages now. Sure. And I'm like, I didn't really know that much about the Harlem Renaissance, but now I know an answer to bar trivia. So yeah, I don't know.
Let me tell you about lichenometry. I know all about it, you know, just from the reading comp passage. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So the interest helped. And then, so I dialed back from live. Again, I think I said my score shot up. I think by March I was scoring in the 160s. And I decided to not sign up for March. I previously wanted to, but I held off because I knew I wanted to get higher than that just because I saw a potential possibility. And I think by mid-March or something before the deadline, I was hitting like high 160s, and I signed up for the April test. And again, really just like having a study group too, and being able to explain the questions myself that I didn't understand, like that teaching aspect really helped me, and having study partners that like, they have things that I don't understand and I have things that they don't understand. So it was helpful if you can, anybody else, if you can find a comrade out there who's going through it with you.
And LSAT Demon Live is a great way to do that. I mean, I don't want, this is not supposed to be like a commercial for LSAT Demon, but that is one of the benefits that you got from LSAT Demon, right? Is that you went to some live classes, some people were fishing around trying to find a study buddy, and you, turns out you got a great one who was way above you. You know, you can actually benefit potentially more from finding somebody who scores lower than you, because now you are the one that's doing more of the explaining, which is where we really develop our understanding. But that's great. You had somebody who was also able to explain stuff to you in a way that you could feel that click.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually like, that's the next thing I did. So by April, I made this other friend through somebody else who was studying for the, or who is currently still studying for the LSAT. And she's visually impaired, so she needed a reader. So what I said that I would do with her at first was just read for her. That was all she needed. And then it became clear, like, she was learning too. So I got her onto the Demon, and then I started teaching her, which was extremely helpful as well. I'd just get on with her like weekly, and we'd go over questions. I would do that too, because I was still studying.
Are you going to be her actual reader for the test?
I'm trying to figure out if I can, because LSAC has some weird rules about, like, because I've taken it in a certain time span, I might not be able to, but I want to.
I mean, that really makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Imagine, what if I was the reader for someone who's visually impaired?
Yeah.
Like, I can read the question in a way that I'm gonna definitely help you find the answer.
Totally. I know. Just emphasis on C.
C says.
Yeah. They have like, you know, if you're an LSAT tutor or anything, you can't read for the LSAT. But but hey, she's not paying me. So
Yeah.
So that was super helpful too, the teaching it. So really all in all, it was just continuing to practice, and it took me, I think, a total of, what is that, 8 months. So I took April, I got a 167. I wasn't happy with that. That was like near the bottom end of my range. I was scoring maybe an average of 170 at that point.
So now signed up for June. You're just way above. You're already way above where you were going to already apply to law. You're 10 points higher.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But now you're like, wait a second, this score that's 10 points higher than my previous. Oh, wait, no, I guess 154, huh, you had. So now you've got a 167 on record. So you're 13 points above your previous official. But then you got greedy because you knew you could do better.
Yeah. And I mean, at that point, too, like what I had done is I played with the estimator. I submitted my transcripts to LSAC. I got my CAS GPA,
your official LSAC GPA UGPA from LSAC.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, I just started going, oh, wait, these top schools are for me. And like, that's, I'm not destined to be at an 80 or below at DU. that because my scores already show I am qualified to go to these better schools and they will pay for me to do it.
Yeah, I mean, so I was looking earlier at the 509 for DU, that's Denver University. Mm-hmm. And I had already said that 157 was their 25th percentile.
Yeah.
If you ever wonder how seriously the law schools take the LSAT, all you have to do is look at their 509s, because this same school that has a 25th percentile of 157 has a 50th percentile of 160 and a 75th percentile of 162. So there's a whole entire 6-point range between their 25th percentile and their 75th percentile. And you, Beth, improved by double digits.
Yeah.
Going from below their 25th, which is they might not even admit you, or they definitely will charge you full price if they do. Now you're at 167, which is like you're looking at that school going, well, I mean, if you offered me a full ride, maybe I would consider it. But yeah. I also have these other doors that are probably open to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it even just started going, oh, wait, UC University of Colorado Boulder is a better school. They're at, you know, sit around 50. And I could go there now because previously I thought I would never make it to a 160 and be able to go there. So I signed up for the next LSAT. I took June 2022. And on that test, I got a 172, which I think in June, my average was a 173. So I was happy that like, okay, I'm in the range of where I would be happy to go to schools, but I still know I can do better. I just wanted a better score at that point because I'd seen better scores on my practice tests. So I signed up for August as well. And then I just took it easy. I practiced a little bit here and there and I really didn't go that hard. I had gone through so many tests already. And I had plans for the summer and I knew that I could get a couple extra points, even if I didn't do a couple hours a day anymore. So I took August and I got a 174 on August, got my score back last week. So I'm 27 points up, 20 points up on record.
So 27 points from your initial diagnostic, 20 points from your first official test to your final official test at a 174. So now what does your application cycle look like?
Don't bully me for this. I am almost ready to hit submit. Leslie has my personal statement. She's doing the last go through today. I wanted it to be done, not just fast.
Yep. So, no, that's right. You're doing all the stuff right. Scholarships have already started coming out. I don't know if you know this, Beth, but University of Arizona was actually offering scholarships in August this year. So there are, that's Arizona State. So, but there are scholarship offers that are already kind of out there circulating. So if you're applying this cycle, you do want to make sure that you're applying. Everybody, listen, here's what you do. You look at the open date for applications for all of the schools that you're interested in, and you try to apply as close as possible to right after the application date. And if that means waiting another cycle and waiting for the next application cycle, that's totally fine. But here we are in September today, as we record, it's September 7th. And I'm not going to bully you, Beth, for
mine will be in by Friday.
Perfect. Okay. That is perfect. Yeah, how many schools are you going to apply to?
15. And I also have fee waivers for like 13 of them already.
How'd you get those?
Either they came through the candidate referral service on LSAC, because as soon as they got my 174, they started begging me to apply. Different schools did, and waived my fee. And then other ones, I also just emailed schools, asked if they give fee waivers. Yeah, I got really curious about it. Just wondering if you guys offer this. Yep. I gave them my GPA, my LSAT, and my LSAC number.
Yeah. You could also have said something like, because I work for the government, I don't have a lot of money for, you know, I'm financing my own legal education. I work for the government. I don't make that much money. These applications are really expensive. I got this email randomly from school X and they offered me a fee waiver. I was wondering, do you guys do that sort of thing? And it's just, they don't want to say no to that because they want your application, right? It doesn't really cost them anything to give you a fee waiver. It's just $100 that they're, or $75 or whatever it is that they're not going to get from you, but they know they want you to apply and you're telling them, hey, I got fee waivers from other schools. You know, be nice about it.
Yeah.
But they should give you that fee waiver. So 13 out of 15 fee waivers. Excellent. Yeah. That's, by the way, worth $1,000 right there.
No, exactly. Yeah. It was, totally. I mean, there's a couple that I'm applying to just because it was like, well, they waived the fee. I don't know that I would go there, but I'm going to apply anyways. Yeah.
Well, and now you're giving them an opportunity to like really roll out the red carpet for you. If that school comes in and says, hey, you're a killer applicant, we're going to offer you our Dean Scholarship plus stipend or, you know, special honors program or whatever it is. And hey, by the way, we'd like to pay for you to come out to visit the campus and, you know, free trip to Austin or whatever. Yeah. I mean, why not like go check it out and just and see? I mean, you really, so I think students get it backward, right? Students think that they're going to decide what law school they're going to then apply. And that's just totally wrong. You need to apply broadly, early with your best LSAT, then see what offers come in. And then at the very end of your cycle, at the very end, that's when you decide not only what school you're going to go to, but whether you're going to go to school. You know, you don't have to go to law school. You know what what your offers are this cycle, or you will once you get your apps in and you start getting those offers. You know, you'll know in March what your offers look like, and then you can make the decision to pick a school or pick none at all.
Yeah.
And do something else with your life or go back to the drawing board and try again next cycle. But, you know, you've already got your best LSAT and you are applying early in the cycle. So I mean, the offers are going to be fabulous, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it'll work out. I'm excited. I'm excited to submit.
You're still applying to Denver, still applying to Boulder?
Yeah, I am. It's still up here just because we have lived in Denver for like 4 years. I love it here. We're happy here. You have a
super cool apartment with exposed brick on the walls.
I mean, that
looks like, you're happy where you are. So of course you should apply to those schools, but you should also definitely apply to, you know, especially credible. Credible competitor schools, right? Which I would think you're kind of in the West. So anything in Mountain Time or maybe Pacific Time, you know, especially similarly ranked schools, like just kind of pulling them out of my, like University of Arizona, Texas A&M.
Oh, have you been there to Fort Worth?
Oh, that's in Fort Worth. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. I went and saw it recently and my parents live in Texas, went to see it and went, never mind.
Yeah. I mean, are you applying to University of Utah?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you where I'm applying if you want.
Sure. But, yeah, go ahead.
So CU, DU, UCLA, USC, Loyola, Marymount, Pepperdine, Berkeley, and NYU, Fordham. I was going to apply to Columbia, but that's off. I'm not going to go there. So I'm not going to like waste my own time.
Okay.
I like Atlanta, so I'm applying to Emory and to the University of Georgia.
Cool.
And UT Austin. And Yale gave me a fee waiver too, so I might just see what happens with
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah. I mean, like if you don't apply, you're just closing that door preemptively, right? And so I think you want to know whether you would have gotten into Yale.
Totally. Even if it's just so I table talk for the next year ago, I got into Yale and I turned them down.
Hey, if you turn down Yale, for that full ride. We have seen people do stuff like that before.
And yeah.
I never think it's a mistake. UCLA gives you a full ride and you also get into Yale and you're like, well, let me see. No tuition, perfect weather. Welcome to UCLA.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the criteria now. Like I live in Denver. It's sunny 300 days a year. I don't want to go anywhere colder. I'm from the East Coast already. Don't want to go back colder. Only place I would do it for is New York City. So, and then like I'm married too. So we've got my husband's job to think about, which is cool. And he's flexible and he can work remote, but you know, work it in. There's still factors there. Yeah.
Cool. And yeah, I mean, we can cross all these bridges months from now when your offers start coming in. I mean, you know, you don't need to do anything. All you need to do is just be patient. It's going to suck. You're going to be waiting to hear back. You're going to wonder if they forgot about you. You're going to get waitlisted at some of the schools and you're going to feel badly about that. But other schools, they're going to give you a full ride probably right away. You know, like, I mean, what is Boulder or DU? Yeah. Like, what are they doing if they don't like try to get you right away? Totally. They probably will make great offers right away. And now you'll just go, okay, well, hey, worst case, I go to this school for free.
Yeah.
Let's see what other offers I've got. And then you just decide in April, May, like way down the road.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This is amazing. I feel like I could talk to you all day. Do you have tips for current LSAT students?
My tips would honestly be take your time, push it off another year if you're not ready. That is like the best thing. I mean, actually, even that, I wanted to go to law school when I was in undergrad. I am so, so, so glad that I have 4 years of work experience before I'm pursuing this, because I've also changed jobs like 3 times. I've gotten to know lawyers. I've gotten closer to what I want to be doing and figured out, okay, yes, I still do want to go to law school. So that's been huge. Push it off. Like I said, I took like 6 months studying for the LSAT. Sure, maybe I could have done it in 3 if I studied for double the amount of time per day, but I enjoyed my life while I did it. I didn't take that many full tests. I took like 3. Yeah, I just enjoyed my life and my friends, and I, you know, did things that are good for me, and I was happy while doing it. So I think that's probably the advice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, also, would you have improved by 27 points if you would have tried to do it in 3 months, right? In 3 months, maybe you improve 17 points and you're like, that's amazing. I mean, you'd still be like ecstatic with a 17 point improvement, but you wouldn't even know that the 27 points was possible for you.
Totally.
And you're not applying to Yale with a 164.
No,
you're applying to Yale with a 174 because you know that it's like reasonably in their range.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just good to get hungry for like, all right, what can I do? It was sort of just a test of like, how much am I going to push my own boundaries? Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it.
I say it all the time. I really thoroughly believe that the LSAT is in large part a test of how hard you can work. It makes perfect sense on the page. It makes perfect sense if you take the time to make sense of it. If you get the right kind of help, I mean, I understand that like there are certain questions in logical reasoning or whatever that you're just going to have no clue on. And yeah, we can help to make it make sense, but we're going to walk you through the steps so that you can feel that click one time. And once you feel that click one time, then eventually you can start to get that click on your own. But yeah, I mean, it's going to take some time and some effort. Yeah. Like it's just,
I mean, but yeah, that's the thing though. Like keep pushing through. Yes. It's hard at first, but the test is easy. And I would actually say like, it's really fun. I like the LSAT. I did a game today because I was bored. I mean, it literally is like, I really love this test and had fun doing it. I think 4 months into studying, I was like drinking with my friends and passing around LSAT questions and like making my friends do them. And I was like, don't you like this? And most of them didn't, but it was fun for me. So
no, that's great.
Yeah.
You're the exact kind of psycho that is perfect for law school. Like you got around to the point where you realized, oh shit, this makes perfect sense to me. It doesn't make perfect sense to everybody else. It didn't used to make sense to me, but now that it makes sense, I love it because I kick ass at this game. And now, hey, this is a fun, easy game for me to play. Not just the logic games, by the way, which you know, perfected your games first, but then eventually you got around to getting damn near perfect on LR and RC both. And it's like, well, because you're playing the game and you've learned to love the LSAT. We say this all the time, the LSAT is easy. Mm-hmm. And we also say that you're just probably not going to be successful at the test if you don't learn to love the test.
Yeah.
Well, Beth is an example of somebody who learned to love the test and found 27 points of improvement. as a result. So that is terrific news. I want to let you have the final word if there's anything else that you want to share with the listeners.
Man, no, just that. Just don't rush to work harder at a career that will last you many, many years. Just put it off. God. Figure out a little bit of your life.
You're going to be happier as a lawyer without $250,000 in debt. And Beth figured out, I mean, because you really did, like, that 27 points is very legitimately worth $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 50 whatever thousand dollars a year times three plus interest plus fees plus books plus living expenses, you know, and now you're not paying any tuition, maybe not paying any fees. Sometimes people end up getting stipends. Like, we'll see what those offers look like when they come in, right? But I think you conservatively saved a couple $100,000 by working on the LSAT for 6 months.
Yeah, totally.
Fantastic. Do you want to work for us?
Yeah, maybe. I'm waiting until I submit. And then I was going to hit you up soon about that.
Perfect. We are always hiring, you know, and the people that we hire are listeners and Demon students. We want to keep it in the family. And so, you know, people like you that, like, you got it completely. It totally clicked for you. It totally worked for you. And that's all of our teachers now are people who have exactly that same thing. So if you want to meet more people like Beth, LSATdemon.com is the place to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll once the apps are in, I'll send you an email.
Sean says, hi, Ben and Nathan. I used a different prep course for a while. We're going to leave that unnamed. And while I was able to use their materials to get a 171, I feel like I could get a few more points on the test. I subscribed to Demon Premium and made a concerted effort to use the Demon to the fullest and ended up with a 176 on my last LSAT. I'll certainly be recommending the Demon to anyone studying for the LSAT in the future. I do have one question. I'm a URM with a 3.71, and the Demon scholarship calculator shows that I'll get significant scholarships basically everywhere, which just strikes me as highly unlikely since I'm below the GPA 25th percentile for many top schools. Any thoughts on what is a reasonable target for a full ride scholarship for those of us who are splitters? Should I apply to the entire top 14 and hope one of them gives me a good scholarship? Or is there a more targeted approach I should use? In any case, I just wanted to say thanks for the work you all do at the Demon. Best wishes, Sean. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah. So first of all, let me explain, Sean, what we're doing in the Demon Estimator when you select URM, right? So I'm actually getting this from the estimator in the top corner. It says learn more. We explain our methodology there. It says this is under the underrepresented minority bump. Because schools generally favor underrepresented minorities, selecting URM in the estimator increases your index number by adding 3 points to your LSAT score and 0.2 points to your GPA. Okay, maybe that bump is too large. Maybe it's too small. We don't know. That's going to push your GPA up from, wait, what were you, a 3.71? Is that correct? To a 3.91, right? So that's a significant difference. Maybe the bump is too large for GPA. I don't know. But the reality is that URMs are in high demand at all law schools and especially at the top. So I wouldn't be surprised if they gave you scholarships. And I think the best strategy here is to apply broadly because you don't know how much different schools are going to weigh your URM status.
Yep. I have seen crazy offers for URMs since the very beginning of my LSAT teaching days, and that has never changed. I remember people getting into actual Harvard with like 165s where I was like, wow, really? That's way below, but they're a URM and they're so underrepresented at the very top schools that, yeah, those top schools, if they want you and they do, then they have to entice you with money. So I would absolutely, you know, I'm not saying you have to apply to all 14 in the top 14. Maybe there's some of the schools that you wouldn't go to, even if you got a full ride. But if, you know, if you're kind of agnostic and if you would go to any of those schools that would let you go for free, I think you should apply to all 14 of them and you probably will get full ride offers with those numbers.
I mean, when you're in that range, I just think you should always apply to all 14 because even if you don't plan to attend some of them, you can use them as negotiating tools. That's all.
Yep.
I just think the benefit is so outweighed by the cost of applying. Anyways, thanks for writing in, Sean, and good luck. Keep us updated. Let us know what happens.
We have an email here from Daisy.
Hello, Ben and Nathan. Thank you so much for your work on the Demon Daily podcast. I enjoy listening to the podcast while working out, as it provides a mental distraction for me. Okay. I'm in a particularly peculiar situation, and I would like your advice about what to do. I have a pending court case regarding my asylum status because I fled my home country due to religious persecution. I touched on this experience in my diversity statement, but I am aware that law schools require you to disclose any character and fitness issues in your application. My question is, do I disclose this information in the character and fitness section or not, since it is not particularly a criminal or academic charge? I'm a little unclear about what exactly you're going to court for, but when it comes to character and fitness, you can always ask your state bar what they think you should do. And when in doubt, I would disclose.
Yeah, that said, fleeing your home country due to religious persecution, I don't know why that would need to be a character and fitness issue. I mean,
no, the issue is, I'm assuming because she's asking about it in regards to character and fitness, that there's something that's come up after she received asylum status. Like, she got asylum status and now there's some court case saying, hey, wait a sec, we want to relook at this. Maybe I'm reading too much into what she's asking, but.
Oh, I have a pending court case regarding my asylum status because.
I don't know if it's a court case to determine her asylum status or she already got it. And now someone's saying, I don't know if you should have got it because there was something wrong with your process. I can't tell. So.
Yeah, you're going to have to. I agree, Ben. Talk to your state bar. Potentially also talk to law schools that you are going to apply to. You don't need to hide this because, this is the kind of thing that you just, you want to make sure you err on the side of disclosing. And if it's like you have an ongoing, like you might get deported, you fled due to religious persecution, but now the United States might not actually grant you asylum status. I don't know that that's a character and fitness issue, but it does sound like something that the schools need to know about. But I would start with the state bar and then potentially ask the schools themselves. And I don't think I'd be very shy about sharing the exact details because the last thing you want is to get into law school, pay for a year or two or three of a JD, and then have this come out in your character and fitness application for the bar.
Yeah.
And have it be like, oh, you can't sit for the bar because you didn't disclose this thing that you're supposed to disclose. That would be terrible. So make sure that this is one where you would want to probably over-disclose rather than under-disclose.
This is an email from Stacy.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. I've been studying the LSAT on and off for about 2 years now. I work a very stressful full-time job. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to devote enough time to studying as I wish to. That said, I have still been able to improve on my weak areas, such as reading comprehension and necessary assumption questions on the logical reasoning. However, when it comes to weekend questions, I seem to get stuck. I'm really good at strengthen questions, by the way. English is not my native language. I was born and raised in China. My native language is Mandarin Chinese. But I don't think that's the issue at all. I've listened to your advice on LSAT Demon. For example, the correct answer for strengthen/weaken questions tends to be strong. Answer choice strength, Stacy, is never the first thing to be thinking about. You need to be looking on a weaken question. You need to be looking for the one that hurts the argument. What's a bad fact for them? And the correct answer might only weaken the argument a little bit, or it might weaken the argument a lot. Hopefully you find one that weakens the argument a lot. But just because it's a strongly worded answer does not mean that it's going to weaken the argument at all. In fact, it could strengthen the argument. So thinking about answer choice strength is just not the first thing.
No, and the problem with that is it just gets in the way of things that are much, so much more important. It's like focusing on your personal statement before you've gotten your best LSAT score. You need to understand the argument. You need to understand what's wrong with it. You need to understand what the author was concluding, because at the very least, the correct answer is going to make that conclusion less likely to be true. And everything else after that is icing on the cake.
Yep. Stacy continues, For weakened questions, I can get easily distracted by the wrong answers and make a case for them. I'd really like to get better at weakened questions. Do you guys have any good suggestions for me? Thank you lots in advance. By the way, my goal is to become a human rights lawyer, helping jailed journalists and rights lawyers in China. Just know that your LSAT Demon program will indirectly help them one day when I reach my goal. Cheers, Stacy. That is awesome. Hey, Ben, we're helping freedoms around the world. You want to help Stacy with weekend questions? I have one thing that I would like to say for sure, which is that, Stacy, you should never, ever be making cases for answer choices. Not on weekend questions, not on strengthened questions, not on any other type of question. You need to expect answer choices to be wrong. A is wrong 80% of the time. So is B, so is C, so is D, so is E. There are never two correct answers. There's only ever one correct answer. So that means you need to rule out 4 out of 5 answers. If you're reading A and you're like, well, this could be correct because blah, blah, blah. And then you're reading B going, well, B could be correct because blah, blah, blah. Well, then you're absolutely doing it wrong. And that's independent of question type. I don't know why you happen to do that on weekend questions, but I do have a hypothesis, which is you're probably not good enough at attacking the arguments in the first place. You need to try to predict these answers, Stacy, not be passive and expect the answer choices to explain it to you. You need to be in attack mode and coming up with lots of ideas about how you could make this argument worse. Then hopefully in the answer choices, one of them will like jump out at you like, oh shit. Yeah. That one, either I predicted it or I predicted that type of thing. Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, because Stacy is looking for answers that are stronger, then that's probably the case that she's trying to make, right? It's like, hey, okay, well, this one looks like it could be stronger than this other one. You're focusing on totally the wrong thing.
Right. The way you don't do it, Stacy, is like, look at A, is it strong wording? Okay, that could be the answer. Look at B, is it strong wording? No, okay, it's probably not the answer. You're already wrong. I mean, A could be strongly worded, but play for the wrong team, or be strongly worded and also irrelevant. B could be weakly worded, but could weaken the argument. And so if that's the type of sorting that you're doing on these answer choices, then yeah, you're doing it way, way wrong. Always attack the argument no matter what type of question it is. Attack the argument. Then if it's a weakened question, you might have already predicted the answer.
Yep. When it comes to attacking the argument, what you're specifically doing is you're trying to figure out why the premises, the evidence in the argument, doesn't prove the conclusion. If you think the argument makes sense, if you think the conclusion makes sense, you're missing something, because it's impossible to weaken a perfectly formed argument. There must be some weakness, and you need to identify that before you even read the question and know that you're on a weakened question.
Imagine that you're a defense attorney and the prosecution is the argument. The prosecution is trying to convict the conclusion, basically. They're trying to prove whatever their conclusion is. That's the thing that they're trying to prove in court. And you need to be able to let the premises be true. So you have to accept the record shows this and this and this. Like, I'm not going to argue about what the statute is, or I'm not going to argue about that video does exist, right? These are facts, and you have to allow the facts to be true, but then see if you can weasel out of the conclusion somehow, figure out a way that the conclusion doesn't have to be true. And you do this independent of the answer choices first. Then go into the answer choices expecting them to be wrong, but one of them hopefully will, you know, reveal itself as, hey, if I'm a fact, then that conclusion is now suspect. And that's how you should be doing weekend questions.
Yep.
Hope that's helpful.
Yeah, thanks for writing in.
We have an email here from Nick.
Hey, Ben and Nathan, I just want to run through a hypothetical with you guys, if that's all right.
Sure.
If I took the LSAT in October, got a score that was high enough for scholarships at my safety schools and not high enough for scholarship or maybe even acceptance into top tier schools, and then decided to retake the LSAT the following cycle after declining safety school acceptances, does that hurt my chances the second time I apply in the future? Okay, I don't think it hurts your chances. I think schools will still want you just as much in the future as they do today. That said, I hate this strategy because I feel like it sets people up for taking bad offers, right? You're applying to safety schools. They are likely to accept you. They are likely to offer you money. And then, well, okay, why? Why are you doing this and then hoping to do better on the LSAT? Let's focus on getting the LSAT up to where you want and then using that score at the beginning of whatever cycle you decide to apply.
Yep.
Okay. Nick continues, unrelated, is it common for students to get into a lower ranked school and transfer? It's not common. People do it, but it's not common. And you can actually look at the 509 reports on lsatdemon.com/scholarships. And at the very bottom of a 509 report, you will see how many students have transferred, I think, into the school.
Yep. I'm looking at University of Michigan 509 right now. It's at the very bottom of page 4 is their schools from which students transferred. So, okay. Actually, no, there was 4 from George Washington University who transferred to Michigan last year. Then there was 1 each from American, Brooklyn, UC Irvine, Campbell University, which I've never even heard of, Cincinnati, Fordham, Indiana University, Marquette, Pepperdine, UNLV, the U, and Washington and Lee University, but it's only 1 each. So, you know, we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and then 4 from George Washington. So it was a total of 16 transfers in. And by the way, that is a school that has 313 people in their first year class.
Yep.
So is it possible? Yeah. Is it likely? Very not likely, depending on the school you're looking at. Of course, at worse schools, there'll be more transfers up, ironically. Yep.
Nick continues, I know the ideal situation is just apply in September with my highest possible score, but I wanted to run through this for shits and giggles anyways. Wow, that's the second time we've heard that phrase today. Okay.
Might have been the same correspondent. That's a pretty obvious verbal tick, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Nick. I don't have anything else to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just want to double down on your earlier advice that you shouldn't do any of this plan, Nick. You're going to set yourself up to take bad offers, and we don't want you to do that. So just don't even apply the cycle at all. Wait until you have your very best LSAT, apply at the beginning of next cycle, and just ensure that you're giving yourself the best chance at a great offer instead of throwing out for shits and giggles and getting then bad offers. I mean, it's just not a good play.
It's also a distraction from your number one priority right now.
From doing the LSAT, which is by far the most important thing. Yeah. In the chat, we got a live audience today, and James says, some great advice I got was to never attend a school that you wouldn't be happy graduating from, because as a 0L, everyone thinks they can transfer until the 1L grades come back, which is absolutely true. I mean, on the first day of school, when I was at Hastings, I'm sure that half the people there thought they were going to transfer to Berkeley in their next year. And, you know,
and that's
the truth
just not
was
possible.
No, it is not possible. It was like 2% of the class transferred across the bay to a vastly better law school, but not all of the, you know, 500 1Ls who thought they were going to transfer. That's just not how it works.
Yep.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.